Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Growth Well podcast. I'm your host, Josh Bird. This is a podcast all about exploring the art of balancing personal growth and professional well-being. I have my friends, my colleagues, people I've worked with on the show, and it's just about exploring how to be a better business person and a better person. Special thanks to Market Scale, as always, for helping making this podcast happen. Today, I've got an amazing guest for you. I'm super excited because Joshua Silver is someone that I started my startup career with. I'll tell you all a story a little bit later in the show, but partially because of my name, I think I got the job, and I'm very thankful for that. And so he is an entrepreneur. He is now building a new company called Rainforest, which I'm sure we'll talk about. He's a dad, and he's in the Atlanta startup community. And so I'm just really excited for you to meet Joshua Silver. So Joshua, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to the conversation.
Absolutely. So I just for our listeners, we started our career at Patient Co. together. You were one of the co-founders. Obviously, your name's Joshua Silver. The other co-founder was named Bird Blitch. My name is Josh Bird. So when they were looking for a marketing person, they like to say my name just rose to the top. And luckily, I aced my interview, and the rest is history. I was with that company for 7 years and really loved it. But what's even funnier is I had to change my name on the first day because we were in such a tight little cramped space, and somebody would say, "Hey, Josh," and two heads would kind of pop up over the partition, and somebody would say, "Hey, Bird," and somebody, two heads would pop up. So I was like, "Y'all got to call me JB." And for the rest of my career there, my wife was like, "Who is JB and why do you go by that name?" But I like to chuckle every time on that.
And I still call you JB today, so I may do it unintentionally today. So
Bird does too. I was talking to him a couple of days ago, and he still calls me JB. Most people from that era do, and I love it. I really smile every time, so don't hesitate. But for the rest of the audience who doesn't have the background with you, tell us a little bit about who you are, how you got your start, and what you're doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a three times now fintech founder here in Atlanta. Really proud to support the Atlanta fintech community, which is why I keep starting companies here. But I've been through three companies now. The first, as you mentioned before, was Patient Co., which was a healthcare patient payments company where we helped large health systems streamline all of their patient billing processes and payment technology. And I was there for over a decade. That was a venture-backed business. And ultimately, I'm sure we could talk more about it later, but had a really successful exit selling to a private equity roll-up. And it's now a public company called Waystar.
Yeah.
After that, I changed pace a little bit and started a consulting company. So changed gears from the deep fintech technology, but stayed in the space because I was helping other software companies with their payment strategy. And it was a really interesting time in my life, which actually we'll probably talk more about today because it really formed, I think, some of my opinions about how I run this business. And then after a couple of years of running that consulting firm, I got the itch to get back into technology, into building, a highly scalable venture scale business. And so in early 2022, started Rainforest. And Rainforest is embedded payments as a service. So we are the infrastructure layer that powers payments for many different software companies and helps software companies add payments to their product without having to incur a lot of the challenges that a traditional payments company incurs.
Yeah. And during that time, you also started your family, right? And so that changes a whole lot of things too, right?
I did. So today I've got a 6-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son. My wife and I live in Brookhaven. So we are very busy professionally and then very busy on the weekends and nights with the family.
I love that. I love that. I'm the same way and I wouldn't have it any other way. It's awesome. So one of the core tenets of this show is really exploring purpose, what gets you out of bed in the morning. And It's different for everybody, but I find that all entrepreneurs like yourself have something that drives them forward. And so what would you say that is for you? And has it changed over the years, or you know, what do you think about when you wake up in the morning?
You know, for me, I love building teams and I love building technology solutions to real world business problems. If you look at kind of every business I've done over the last almost two decades, it's been about helping healthcare consumers pay their bills and helping hospitals run more efficiently. Mm-hmm. In the consulting roles, it was helping entrepreneurs build more scalable businesses and increase their revenue by adding payments into the product and making them stickier. And here we're doing kind of the same thing. We're helping software platforms in a very scalable, robust way to grow their client base. And for me, that's really rewarding. We get to work with so many different great entrepreneurs and business leaders across all different industries. And it is not only very intellectually stimulating and satisfying to me, but you see the real world results. And when we have our clients call us and say, look, you made a real difference in our client base, or we were able to get a higher valuation because we were working with you, or we were able to retain clients at a higher rate. That to me is really personally satisfying. And I think it's, I think it's kind of interesting, Josh. You know, some entrepreneurs are kind of solving a problem that they themselves had, or that they, you know, are just kind of compelled to go out and solve for some kind of greater reason.
Right.
You know, for me, it's kind of the opposite almost. It's what else could I be doing? And through process of elimination over a number of years, realized there's nothing else I'd rather be doing than starting companies. Cause I looked at after we sold PatientCo, I looked at doing a bunch of different things, whether it was going and working for a larger company, you know, doing a nonprofit, sitting on some boards, doing some investing, a lot of different things I tried, and really none of them gave me that same satisfaction as waking up every day and you know, linking arms with other people who are on the same mission in a you know, very high stakes and high intensity and fast paced environment. And so I love what I do.
It is an absolute awesome thing that we do. I share that passion with you. You know, it was fun. It was fun. Rainforest is in ATV, where I talk about a lot. I work with several companies that are out of there as well. And I was consulting for one of them. And lo and behold, I show up to work the first day and Rainforest is right next door. You had brought three or four PatientCoians along for the ride. And so it was like a big reunion. It was awesome. There's a small community, but I think that that community is really centered around that passion. I'll never forget when we were working through some of the values and things at PatientCo. And for the listeners, you know, I'll try to keep the reminiscing to a minimum here, but there's a lot of history here. We actually made healthcare bills easy to pay, and that's pretty wild because nobody likes to pay their healthcare bills. But when we knew we were really onto something was when patients started writing us and telling us thank you and how easy it was to pay their bill. And finally someone got it right. And we started posting, you know, those emails, like basically up on the wall to drive us. And it was just such a cool moment. And it's such a cool thing to see how you've carried that sort of sense of making life better for others, mm-hmm. making businesses better for others, kind of through all the work that you've done so far. So I'm curious, to do all that, you've got to be very driven, but you really, I'm finding the older I get, you need to be structured and have habits and mm-hmm. routines. I know I've seen you in the gym with your trainer at times. Like, what habits and rituals and routines do you have that keep you both grounded and growing at the same time?
So on a personal level, there's a couple things. One is as you mentioned, I do make it a point to exercise a couple times a week. And like so many other things in life, I work out with a personal trainer because I find that to be super effective. And I could spend mm-hmm. 3 hours doing it myself poorly, or 1 hour with a personal trainer and, you know, get that same bang for the buck. And so bringing in experts, I think, is a recurring theme you'll hear me talk about. But, you know, getting that exercise in and having that time is important. You know, another thing I do is I travel quite a bit. It's oftentimes for work or for some meeting, but I almost always build in an extra afternoon or a morning or an extra day here and there. I know some people are just go in, get the meeting done and fly right home. Mm-hmm. I really like to take the time to appreciate the different environments and different cities and different countries that I'm in. And, you know, for me, that gives me a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Anytime I'm in a big city, and can kind of feel that energy. And I get some of my best thinking done on the road. And so my team probably looks at my calendars and said, hey, he's traveling an awful lot. And honestly, that's the time that other CEOs have is kind of unstructured thinking time. I really just do it when I'm on the road because having that physical separation from home, physical separation from the office makes me be able to just open my mind a lot more. So those are a couple things I think on the purely personal level. You know, on the professional level, one thing that I really did differently in this company and something that I learned, you know, both from time at PatientCo, but also when I was consulting and working with so many different companies at different stages is really bringing on a tremendously talented leadership team. We were fortunate here at Rainforest that we, based on previous success, were able to raise a significant amount of capital early. And so not every entrepreneur is going to have this luxury, but certainly we did. And we invested in bringing on a senior leadership team pretty early. And not a figurehead leadership team, but a team that actually is ready to roll up their sleeves and get things done. And so from day one, we kind of had four out of the five key people on the leadership team that we have today. Years later, we recently added a fifth. But having that team in place and knowing that we could delegate a huge amount to that team and that everyone would just step up to the plate to get things done has been, you know, hugely beneficial to me. And in Rainforest, I don't have a co-founder, but I really say that my leadership team is collectively that second co-founder.
Right. Cause you need somebody to bounce things off of, but also that you can trust implicitly that the best interest of the business is their best interest. And they're really working their tails off for a common goal. And I think that's so important. And, you know, I think some startups never get it. Some stumble their way to it. It's really nice. And you're right. It is a little bit of a luxury as a, you know, with your second business that you get to do that. I'm working with a business. It's kind of the same where we get to really pick and choose this time around because of past successes. And that's really nice. But, you know, you talk about exploring the city. I think that's so underrated. I was in Boston a couple of weeks ago, and one morning I just got up and went for a run, and I ran around Wrigley Field, and I ran through the gardens, and I ran past the Boston Marathon finish line, and just basically, you know, made this big loop around Boston and just saw the city. And, you know, my phone wasn't ringing and nobody was texting me or slacking me. And the ideas that I came up with were really transformative. And I don't think I would have gotten those without that space. Right. And I think travel is a good way to do that. So I'm glad to hear you do that. So nobody's perfect. You know, I know that we've seen each other in the throes of startups in frustrating times and get off balance and stuff. But as you've grown, I'm curious, what things or people do you have in your life that maybe can help you recognize you getting off balance a little sooner than you can, because you're, you know, heads down in the work. And how did you come about setting that up?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'd say first off, as I've grown and as I've been exposed to many different businesses and leaders, I think I've gotten a lot of perspective on things. Also, becoming a dad gives you a lot of different perspective and a lot of empathy and patience that I probably didn't have 10 or 15 years ago. And so, you know, I'd say that overall, I try not to let things throw me off kilter as much as they used to. And I think looking back at situations that happen, whether there's a problem with one of our suppliers or an employee issue, or, you know, we need to make some kind of radical change like that, that in the past would have been kind of pretty jarring and gut-wrenching. You know, I've kind of realized that honestly, there aren't that many things that are that big of a deal. And, you know, I try to put perspective on it and say, look, in a year from now, am I going to remember this as like a business defining moment or not? And if it's not, take a breather and kind of, you know, just step back. And so, you know, let the small things go, and most things are small things, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the first, you know, that's the first strategy. I think beyond that, you know, certainly my wife is definitely a huge support in my life, and I wouldn't be able to go and do this and be building this business without her support, and she helps keep me grounded. And additionally, I think I've created an environment, especially amongst the leadership team, but I think even more broadly, where we can all kind of both hold each other accountable, but also give each other 360-degree feedback. And so,
yeah.
You know, I've had people come up to me, you know, whether they're my direct reports or people further down, and kind of call me out and say, wait a minute, you know, this doesn't seem like a good decision, or, hey, it seems like this is a pretty hot-headed decision. Like, are you sure that's really the right thing? Can we just take a breather, take a step back? And I think that's ultimately, I think, the sign of a really successful culture, in my mind, of transparency, when you have even a individual contributor engineer or someone on your ops team be able to raise their hand and say, hey, we've got a problem, or, hey, I don't think this was handled well, or, hey, can we do this differently next time?
Yeah. But it also takes a big dose of humility and grace and openness by all people on that team to see the positive in that feedback, right? And to see the intent, not to see an attack, for instance, right?
Absolutely.
How did you grow that? This is off script, but how, I mean, I've served since PatientCo days, I've probably served 6 or 7 different startups in different capacities. And a big part of what we had there was, I found how special that was. You know, I took it for granted while I was there, if I'm being honest, but it was. And I feel like some of it was luck. You know, we hired great people that cared, and it moved forward. But and some of it was just our willingness to adapt and change and tack. But as you've built a company the second time, and you know those things that you want, how do you build that in, right? How do you make sure that when you tell somebody, they can come to you and call you out on something, they will actually do it and believe that you're not going to, you know, bite their head off or whatever?
Yeah, you know, it's something that we're very intentional about. And I think it starts with being transparent from the top. I think we're one of the most transparent companies, I think, in Atlanta. And I have people tell me all the time, they're like, who just joined, and they say, I can't believe that you're willing to share financials or willing to share mistakes. And, you know, I hold everyone on the team to a really high standard. But the flip side of that is, you know, we're also humble about it, and we also admit mistakes. And, you know, my team, if you ask them, they'll tell you many times where I've gotten up in front of the whole company and said, hey, I've made a mistake. You know, whether it was hiring someone that we shouldn't have, not firing someone fast enough is one that's unfortunately too common among startups. Or even just, you know, with a customer or some type of issue like that. And I think they see not only how we do that with each other, but also with customers.
Yeah.
You know, as a startup, payments businesses are very, very complicated. There's very little room for error when you're moving people's money. And so it has to be 100% right 100% of the time. And that's a very high standard when you're just getting going. And there have been times when we weren't perfect, and they know that I'll be the first one to pick up the phone personally and call the client and explain what happened, and, you know, offer them a deep and profound apology and explain how we're not going to let that happen again. And honestly, we've had some customers, I think, that think more highly of us having had an issue and seeing how we did that service recovery than if we hadn't had any issues to begin with. And when your whole team sees, even from the CEO calling at, you know, a weird hour at night, or calling or texting someone to kind of offer this apology when it really wasn't, you know, my personal fault, it was something on the team, it goes a long way.
Yeah, it really does. We had a poster at PatientCo through one of the doors that said, you know, if a customer has a problem, I am part of the solution. And every single person from sales and CS to dev walked by that multiple times a day. And I don't think we made a big deal about hanging it there, but it certainly internalizes when you see it every day, right? That's 100%. That's what we believe. So, But when those curveballs happen, besides being willing to, you know, be open and admit your mistakes and those types of things, which are crucial, what's your personal go-to? Like, how do you bring yourself back to center or balance or level-headedness?
You know, I think it kind of comes back to that space that I talked about before. You know, I'll try to take a walk for 5 minutes or 10 minutes around the building if I need to like cool down after something that really irked me. Or even say, hey, you know, let's talk about it tomorrow. Is this really, you know, critical tonight? You know, I'm also a big fan of kind of writing your thoughts down. And even if it doesn't go anywhere, even if it's not for public consumption, or even if it's not, you know, an email that you're going to send, kind of drafting it out, because I think through the process of writing it down, you're able to really synthesize what the feeling is. And is it
right?
Are you angry? Are you disappointed? You know, is it something that is really a systemic issue? Like, hey, it wasn't this person's fault. It was really the company that failed them, or we didn't put mm-hmm. the proper checks and balances in place, or why did this happen? And so I think, you know, trying to take time to just, before you just impulsively respond, can be really hard, honestly, but yeah. I think is super important. You know, beyond that, I think just, you know, coming back to it, you know, at a later date or time when you can. We also do a big tradition we have here that kind of came apart from Patient Co, but we've adapted, is retrospectives. Anytime we have some type of issue, and it doesn't actually have to only be technology. It could be an operational issue. It could be a people issue. We do a retrospective on it, and we do a blameless retrospective, which means we're not trying to assign blame to any person. The overwhelming vast majority of the time, it's not a person's fault. It's the system's fault, right? That person shouldn't have had permission to do that. Or that person failed. We didn't give them enough training, or whatever the case was that led to the error.
Yeah.
And we do a ton of retrospectives. If you look at our calendars, they're filled with them. And it's not because we are that bad and we mess up all the time, but even little things, we take the time, and it may be 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes,
right,
maybe just a real quick, hey, let's get in the huddle. Let's talk about, how did this happen? How do we make sure it doesn't happen again? Are there other situations like it that could happen as well? And I think that's very cathartic for people. In addition to just continuous improvement, being able to talk about it and just get it off their chest and say, you know, hey, I brought up 6 months ago that we should have put this alert in place and we didn't, and here's what happened, and kind of I told you so, right? And it's again just very cathartic for people to be able to express that, and then oftentimes people take the initiative right after that to fix whatever it is. And you know, if we had some, you know, lack of alerting, guess what, we're not going to have that anymore.
It's been that's fun. Right.
So kind of that shared ownership and experience is important.
But it, again, it takes that creating a safe space to do that. And I think that's something that you do so well. And so let's move into a little bit of advice. We are around so many really brilliant people who want to start companies. And it seems that the brilliant people who have a brilliant idea and, you know, product market fit and everything, that's one thing, but you know, becoming an entrepreneur who can scale at a high level and do it while remaining sane and be a father and stay healthy, you know, that's a whole nother ball game. And a lot of people don't do that so well, but I think a lot of people want to, as evidenced by the listenership just on this podcast growing, people really want to be that. And you are that. So like, what would you tell yourself right before you started Patient Co, or what would you tell somebody else who's getting into their first business venture?
Yeah, a couple of things. One is be fanatical about your customers. You should know your customers and prospects and their business almost better than they know themselves. And you know, when we started Rainforest, I had the benefit of doing consulting for a couple of years, which was effectively paid product market fit research, right? Yeah. I was going out and doing doing research and getting paid to do it. And so I had already spoken to dozens, if not hundreds, of potential prospects and customers. And so I knew what they were looking for. At Patient Co, I was jumping into a space that I didn't know. Having just graduated college, I hadn't been exposed to kind of the back office of hospitals or doctor's offices. And so what did I do? I actually went and worked for a couple of weeks at the back office of a doctor's office. And
that's right. You sure did.
Told them to put me to work processing patient payments and seeing how the claims worked and all that stuff. And, you know, by the end of it, I really knew the process, you know, almost better than the 25-year veteran, because I was studying the process. I wasn't just doing it. I was studying it. And a lot of times people come to me and ask my advice and they say, hey, what do you think of my idea? And I have to kind of turn it back around and say, honestly, it doesn't really matter what I think of your idea, because I'm not your customer. I want to know what your prospects are going to say. And if you haven't talked to dozens of them, you probably haven't done enough research. So that's kind of one, is just know your customers and obsess about them and take great care of them when you get them. And that will pay off in spades when you do. You know, the second thing I think is clarity of thinking. A lot of times I'll hear people with an idea, and because they're so passionate about it, they'll go on for maybe 15 minutes. And sometimes most times I should say I'm pretty direct. And I stop people in their tracks and say, all right, just time out, stop there. You've been talking for 15 minutes and I really still don't know what you do. And I've been doing startups, I've been around startups for a long time. And if I can't figure out in 15 minutes, then honestly, nobody can. And so you've got to figure out, how do you get the essence of your message and idea down in a way that other people understand? And that's so important for recruiting employees, for finding customers, for telling your story to investors. And the good news is there's lots of people out there to help craft those stories and help refine what the essence is. Make sure you're using those resources and finding them. And then the third and kind of final piece of advice I'll throw out there is just know that most startups take a really long time.
They do.
The ones that you kind of see that are successful, there's very, very, very few of them that have done it in kind of less than maybe 4, 5, 6 years. And many of them are decade plus endeavors. And so if you're not ready personally, family-wise, financially, et cetera, to kind of commit to doing this for the next at least 5 years, probably go do something else. Cause it is hard. There's a lot of highs, there's a lot of lows. And you just need a tremendous amount of grit to kind of get through the early stages. And you know, even as a repeat entrepreneur and someone who's been very successful doing it, it's very humbling to go back to day one and realize, you know, there's a lot of things that you're having to still do hands on. And, you know, while you obviously aren't going to make as many of the same mistakes, there's plenty of new ones to make. And the kind of initial motion of getting your product built and launched is just as difficult, I think, as a repeat entrepreneur as it is for first time.
I sometimes think it's harder. I actually just joined a new startup and we've got 4 people. And I now have the knowledge of what can be done with even a 3-person or 4-person marketing team, not even a big budget, but that marketing team and that sales team is me right now. And that is, I think it's harder because it's frustrating, because I have the knowledge of what I want to do and the reality of my time and my current budget and those types of things. And so it can be harder, but you do learn those lessons and learn to prioritize, like, okay, those are things I want, but what we really need right now is to know our customer, right? To be fanatical about that. We need to make sure that every implementation we do is perfect. And if it's not, we learn why, so we can move forward. And I think that's really great advice. Thank you for sharing that. So moving on, looking forward, you know, what's next for Rainforest? What's next for your family? What travel have you got on the horizon? What's next for Joshua Silver?
You know, staying super busy. I think the calendar for the back half of this year is just crazy, between some personal travel as well as it's conference season.
Really kicking up
there. So I'll log an awful lot of airline miles before this year's up. But on the Rainforest front, things have been phenomenal. We've been very fortunate that we've grown so successfully, even in our first kind of full, you know, year or 18 months of in production operation, and we're growing the team. And so with that, I spend a lot of my time on hiring, and you know, the vast majority, actually of my time is spent on sourcing candidates and vetting them and making sure that they're going to be great fits for the team and keeping that bar high. So, always looking for good talent. If you're in the Atlanta area and want to join a high growth team in the fintech space, reach out to me. You can find me on LinkedIn. Very active there. And, we've got some pretty lofty growth goals for next year.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Seriously, I've worked for and with Joshua for 7 years. You should definitely apply if you even think you're interested. That's just a little plug. You'll work your butt off, but it will be worth it and you will learn so much. Joshua, thank you so much for spending a bit of time with us today. I loved this conversation. I could keep it going. I could keep the, all the reminiscing going forever, but we can do that in the halls at ATV sometime. So thank you so much. That is a wrap, everyone. Thank you for listening. Check out Joshua Silver on LinkedIn. The link will be in the show notes on YouTube. Thank you to MarketScale for making this happen. And until I see you next time, go out there and pursue growth well.